Welcome. This is Cascade Church Portland's podcast. We exist to invite all people to join us as we follow Jesus together in bringing heaven to earth.
All right. I want to set a scene for you. It's May 2016, so almost a year ago. And let's say that you are in Santiago, Chile. You probably were, but we'll assume you're there. And when in Santiago, Chile, where do you go? The zoo. You're an animal lover, and what better way to love animals than to see them encaged? And so you go to see these exotic animals. And like all animals are great, you know, we celebrate like God has this incredible creativity in creating all this diversity of animals, but lions are way more awesome than the rest, right? So you make a beeline for the lion cage. And let's say you're like me. You're not going to do this audibly because you don't want to get kicked out. But like inside of yourself, as you're looking at the lions, you just go, "Hi, Simbenya, baba ichi baba, mwenyamo baba wenya." And you just start getting the Circle of Life song going a little bit. You know what I mean? It puts me. Thank you. Let's get real for a moment. I listened to the first 25 seconds of Circle of Life on repeat driving in this morning. Oh, and I kind of stumbled across it. If you think you might have a bad day, do that and you will not. I was so ready to go when I got here. One more fun fact, and I promise we're going to move on. The other thing is there's a section after that first part where there's like this repeated theme. It's in Kiswahili, right? And it'd be tough to know, and most people get lost at that. A friend once told me, how they hear it and remember it is pink pajamas, penguins on the bottom. And you're like, what? But if you start singing, you go, pink pajamas, penguins on the bottom. Pink pajamas, penguins on the bottom. Pink pajamas. And then someone else can come in, from the day you arrived on the planet, right? And you have a whole thing. So you're there. You're doing the Lion King, right? You're thinking of Simba and Rafiki. And then you notice there's a guy by himself at the zoo, as people do, and he hops inside of the lion enclosure, jumps in. And then soon after getting into the lion enclosure, he removes all of his clothes and starts walking to the lions. And as he is walking to the lions, you hear from your Chilean friend next to you, who is interpreting for you, that he is trying to save the lions' lives. Now, I don't mean physically, I mean spiritually. He's trying to convert the lions to Christianity. And ultimately, he grabs on to a lion and is holding on to it. And the lions at first, while interested and kind of playing around, their playing turns violent and they start attacking the man. The zoo officials have been notified. They come running out. They spray them with water. It doesn't work, and ultimately they have to put down two of the lions. Real story. Just last year in Santiago, Chile, a man who was, in his own words, he survived it trying to provoke a miracle, jumped into the lion enclosure. This actually happened another time too in Taipei. A man jumped out because Christ was going to save him inside of the lion cage. Now, how and why does this kind of thing happen not once, but twice? Daniel in the lion's den. That's why. That's what we're going to talk about today. And we're going to talk about this kind of thing. Now, clearly, these two individuals had things going on. This isn't normal behavior. But it does reflect something that I think is normal. For people who follow Christ, this kind of belief in miracles and what belief in God, what belief in Christ can accomplish, that we can step into the scariest of things and that God will deliver us. And so we want to look at the story again with new eye. What is the story of Daniel and the lion's den? What is it talking about here? because I think some of the impact of the story is lost in our simplified version of it. Because I would say, whether you've grown up in the church or not, Daniel in the lion's den, like, clearly makes the top 10 Bible stories in the Old Testament. Right? You got Noah, Jonah, Adam, and Eve, but like, you don't get very far if you're like, I got to throw in Daniel in the lion's den. It's a great story. So, what we want to do before we get into, and if you have a Bible, you can turn to Daniel. Daniel 6 is where we're going to be looking at. But one bit of information before we go into it. There's a famous painting by Peter Paul Rubens. And this is it. This is of Daniel in the lion's den in 1650. You can go back, yeah, that one. And this is probably one of the most famous photos. And it has really influenced the way we think of Daniel and this lion's den, right? Beautiful mane of hair to rival that of the lions, right? Probably somewhere in his 20s to 40s being cast in this. Looks like he hits the gym at least 3 times a week. Whether or not you've seen this photo, when we think of Daniel in the lion's den, we just tend to think of a guy, right? A little younger, maybe mid-age. The fact is, if we look at the length of the story, Daniel, when he goes into the lion's den, is somewhere between the ages of 70 to 90. This is another photo here that was painted by Britton Riviere. This was done in the 1800s. And do you see the gray hair, right? You see the skinny frame. This is a guy who's been around for a while. If you've been here for the whole message series, it's amazing to know. We are on to a new king. We're not dealing with Nebuchadnezzar anymore in the story. We're dealing with, they call him Darius Cyrus, Cyrus Darius, because there's two different names that are used in the story. They link them. This is one king, one ruler. He got brought over as an exile as a young man, so we're probably dealing with a teenager when he comes into the kingdom, right? He's been exiled to this place, and now he is between 70 to 90 years of age. He has been serving faithfully to different kings through different administrations for all of these years. This is not a guy that's fresh on the block. This is a guy who has seen a lot of things have gone on. So as we read through this story, that's who I want you to envision, not the guy with the gym membership, all right? So let's look, Daniel 6:1, and we're going to look first at verses 1 to 3. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps. Now, we talked about that last time, last week when Scott was here, we hit that. You may not know what satraps are. It's actually, they're a hazard at most golf courses. You want to stay out of the satraps? Come on, that was a little funny. No, satraps, so you had Darius Cyrus, who is the ruler, and it's a big kingdom. They've taken over many, many different places. So what you do is you can't administrate and tax everybody, so you have satraps who oversee different regions. They're kind of like mayors. And their job is to make sure that they get the taxes and they pass on to Darius Cyrus the taxes, the money that is owed to them. Okay? So you have this picture. They are a part of the kingdom. They're one of the leaders of the kingdom. But they very much have a specific goal. And we'll kind of see how that plays out in a little bit. With three administrators over them of 120. So you got about 40 people per administrator. One of them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king may not suffer loss. That's financial. Now, Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. He's going from mid-manager to high-level management, right? At this, the administrators and satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent, right? Because you can be one or the other. finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God." Okay, so we're going back to the satraps. They are there to collect taxes. Now, you might say they're jealous of his promotion. But really, more of the issue to do with Daniel isn't the fact that he's over them. It's that he's not corrupt and he's not negligent in his duties. What kind of administrator would a satrap like? One, this is a little bit shady in telling the king how much money to expect from each of these provinces, right? Because where would the gap go? In the satrap's pockets. The reason why they're not a big fan of Daniel is because he's playing by the rules. It's not just this guy got elevated to a position and that kind of stinks. He's 70 to 90 years old. He's been in the kingdom that long. He has certainly earned the title. It's his integrity that is truly the issue, and it's the reason why they want him out. So I love how at first they're like, so let's go through his tax records. Let's just go through his dealings. Let's see, has he ever sent off any kind of shady memos? They're trying to find it on virtue of his job, and it's not there. So where do they establish Daniel's weakness? It's with God. His weakness is that he is fully obedient to God. So if we were to concoct, if we were to work some sort of situation out, similar to what we heard about last week with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, if we set up some sort of law that his dedication to God would come in conflict with, we know that when it comes to Daniel, his God will win out every time. And so that's what they do. They go directly to the king and they're like, we've been thinking. We think it would be amazing that people pray to no one else except for you. Now, at this stage, we're dealing in the very beginning of the reign of Cyrus Darius. And if you are a newly enacted king or ruler, one way to really solidify your place is to have people worship you as a deity, right? It's a pretty good way to go. One of my ways, it's like a current day example of that. Have you heard some of the stories that have come out of North Korea with Kim Jong-il? So not Un, not the one who's in now, but Kim Jong-il. My favorite was that he played golf once, Kim Jong-un, 18 holes, and he had 15 holes in one, and then retired, never played again. Why are these stories told? Because if you're under a leader that you have not chosen, it's pretty awesome if that guy's like, well, I mean, 15 holes in one, right? We should probably just go along with this whole leadership thing. You create myth around your leader. This is someone that no matter what they say, no matter how they lead them, we should listen to them because they're more than just a leader. This is a deity. So the satraps bring up this idea, and Darius is like, you know what? It'd be kind of weird if I brought it up. But if you're bringing it up, yeah, sure. We should probably sign this into law. 30 days, and if you pray to anyone other than him, you would be in deep trouble. And in fact, they wrote into the law the kind of trouble you would be in is you would be thrown into the lion's den. Now, lion's den in this time was you would have lions around. It's told through different paintings and stories that we knew that lion hunting was a pretty incredible sport, right? Like the ultimate sport, really. This isn't like a deer or something that would like prance away from you, right? It's a lion. And so they would capture these lions and they would put them in dens. And not just anyone, but the kings and the rulers would, because it was a way of keeping on to them, maintaining the lions, and if you're going to be a Bond supervillain, that's a pretty cool way of disposing of people. I'm not for it, I'm just saying. As far as people dying, lion's dens are pretty awesome. So, that was the punishment if you prayed to anyone else. And at that point of the story, it says, and you can read it, and this was important because any laws that were enacted in this kingdom were irrevocable. They had this idea that the law was so important that the only thing that superseded the ruler, the king of the day, was the law. Once they had signed off and enacted it, the king had no power to revoke it. Right? Their idea and concept of the law was big, overwhelming, powerful. So he signs it and enacts it, and then we hear that Daniel prays. Three times a day, he prays towards Jerusalem. He prays towards where he's from. He's praying to God. This is something that he has done. Again, look at his life. He's been around a long time. Now, he was doing this in his house, in his room. This wasn't something where he was out in the public square trying to incite a riot. This was just something that he had been faithfully doing in his room for years. And so they do a stakeout. They probably get some hoagies. They hang out. They watch. They're like, we got three chances at this. And they catch Daniel in the lie. They bring him back to the king. And then we pick up the rest of the story here. So they went to the king and spoke to him about this royal decree. Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or human being except you, your majesty, would be thrown into the lion's den? That's what we call a leading question. The king answered, the decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed. And then they said to the king, Daniel, who is one of your exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to your decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. And so as we continue on in the story, he has no... Now, does Cyrus Darius, does he want Daniel to be thrown in the lion's den? No. If he wanted that to happen, they just could have said, hey, Daniel's talking trash about you. You should throw him in the lion's den. And that would have worked. But Daniel, you know, has incredible integrity and is protecting the interests of the kings by being fair and legitimate in his treatment of the satraps. That's why the trap had to be laid. That's why he had to sign the thing into law so that they could catch him in that. We continue on in the story in verses 16 to 22. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God, who you serve, continually rescue you. A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating or without any entertainment being brought to him. He could not sleep. Continuing on in verse 19, it says, at the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God whom you serve continually been able to rescue you from the lions? Daniel answered, may the king live forever. My God sent his angel and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty. One thing to note there, you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. When did the king become a believer, right? Your God who has the power to deliver you. Sounds like he believes in this God. Within this kingdom, you had many gods. And you had gods that oversaw certain things, right? So you had the sun god, the god of the stars, the god of the moon, the god of the rains, the god of agriculture, the god of fertility, right? This is something that we're familiar with. So to them, whatever god you pray to, it's like, cool. If that god works for you, that's awesome. So for him, this isn't like, I am rejecting my polytheism, I'm becoming a monotheist, there is just one god. It's no, 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 no. Whatever God helps get the outcomes that you want, cool. Let's add it to the file. We'll throw it on with the rest of the gods. This is his reflection. It's not so much one of faith. So, three insights, three things that I want us to think about when it comes to this story. The first, while God does miraculous things, God's presence is not proven by our definition of miracles. The first stories that I share in Chile and in Taipei, right? It's this idea. I love the language in the article about the guy in Santiago, Chile. He was trying to provoke a miracle. And there's a lot of ways and things where we think about miracles and what is the miraculous thing happening. So a couple of weeks ago here downstairs in our kids' ministry, my son Porter, he made a little Dixie cup with some soil and a seed. Put a little peas, right? I think they were peas. Brought it home, we watered it, and we, you know, set it up on the windowsill, and we're like, we'll see if this works. Not holding your breath. Let's hope he forgets. But then it started to grow. And it's continued to grow, and it's continued to grow. It's actually gotten quite large. And I know that because this is not unexpected, some of you aren't like holding back and gasping like a seed, it reproduced itself. But is that any less miraculous? This tiny little seed We didn't add anything more to it. We just put it in soil, added water, some sunlight, and out of it has come this plant that is many, many times over larger than the seed. And these seeds can like store for a while. It's not like you're like, we just got a seed, we got to plant it quick. You can hold on to those seeds from when you harvest them to the next time that you plant, and it will still produce that seed. That's amazing. That's amazing. And every time I would look at it, I thought, this is a miracle. It's a miracle. See, there's this way where we think like the only thing we define as miraculous is the things that happen out of what is normal. Like, wow, the birth of a child. Well, that's cool. I mean, that's how you got here. That's how we all got here. Who cares? No, that's pretty stinking miraculous. If you think about the entire process. The one that gets me, it's amazing, is when you see anyone who is, any woman who's further on in her pregnancy and is up and walking around, how do you breathe right now? Where do your lungs go? And you still have your vital organs. They're all there. And like this 8-pound baby with all of its, you know, appropriate like coverings and things and placenta, and that is a miracle. And yet, that's the way it happens. So like, cool, God, got that, but like, show me something cool. We want a little FX with our faith in God, right? There's this amazing story in Matthew 12. Matthew 12, 38 and 39, the Pharisees said, show us a miracle. Show us a sign so that we will believe. And Jesus said, and some of the Pharisees, teachers of the law said, teacher, we want to see a sign from you. He answered, a wicked and adulterous generation asks for a sign, but none will be given it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. Jesus had already done miraculous things. Like in this story, directly before this, he just heals a boy. It's not like something miraculous had happened, but I love what he said. The only sign that will be given you is the sign of Jonah. Now, some of you are like, not super familiar with the Bible, don't judge me. But does that mean like a fish came up and swallowed a bunch of them and held on to them for 3 days? In the story of Jonah, which that's the part that we focus on a lot, I wouldn't say that's like the appetizer miracle. The real miracle in the story of Jonah is he goes to Nineveh, a city that prides itself on its lawlessness and sin. Jonah performs the weakest sermon of all time. Repent or you're all going to die. Clock's ticking. Then he goes up on the hill to watch God smite them and destroy them. And you want to know what happens? The entirety of the city repents and turns to God. What's the miracle that God is talking, or that Jesus is talking about here? The only miracle you're going to see is Gentiles are in now. The Jews are in. People are going to come to faith and come to me in ways that you didn't think was possible. And how in the world can we hear those words or think about someone turning their life to God and shrug our shoulders and say, eh, that's pretty cool, but there's no pyrotechnics. That's good, but what about that one where the person can't walk and they can walk again? That's the good stuff, right? A lot of us think, like, yeah, God, but I want to see a miracle. What life are you living that you don't see the miraculous each and every day? There's miracles going on all around us. This is a miracle. Just talking to you on amplification, talking to you, period. A bunch of vibrations are coming out of my mouth, hitting your ears and your brain's making sense of it. But you know, let's see some miracles. Are you with me? We want to see a miracle because we want to believe that God exists, but we are living in a miracle. And these people are trying to step into the lion's den, these two individuals in Santiago and Taipei, because they're trying to say, no, I'm going to provoke God into a miracle. It's all a miracle. How do we wake up to that reality? In the story of Daniel, was Daniel trying to get himself thrown into a lion's den? We say, like, let's provoke God to get to like a really good miracle. I bet this will, a bunch of people are going to come to God if I get thrown in. No. He was just praying. That's what he was doing. The same thing he has done for the last 50, 60, 70 years of his life. That's what Daniel was doing. He didn't seek out the story. The story found him. We don't need to provoke a miracle. We need to wake up to the miracle we're already a part of. The next question is, what would I see in the mirror of my peers, my family, and my coworkers? Now, here's what I mean by that. We usually think of ourselves and interpret ourselves. We have a vision of ourselves, right? And they're like, this is who I am. This is what my life is. This is what I'm about. But usually, the most accurate picture I would get of you isn't by asking you who you are. It would be asking those who are closest to you in your life. I would ask your peers. I would ask your coworkers. I would ask your kids, if you have kids. I would ask your parents. I would ask people that have regular interaction with you. Who is this person? And it's not because you're a liar. It's that it's impossible for you to have the perspective that others have of you. In this story, all the satraps that are around Daniel, they know that his problem is integrity. He has way too much of it. He won't let some things slide to the benefit of those who work for him. And the other problem of Daniel is his consistency. It would be a horrible waste of time to put this whole law on the books if ultimately it wasn't going to catch him. But they knew before they got the king to sign the law into order that they were fully going to catch him praying. Of course he would. There was this thing about Daniel that was a reflection of who God was, and it's written all throughout the story. All throughout the story. Now, some of you, if you've grown up in the church, you may have heard this message before, and a lot of ways it gets communicated is like, you think you're a good Christian? Probably not. Let me go ask your friends. We'll see how good a Christian you really are. People are like, oh, that's a good point. I should probably pray more in the lunchroom. That will totally prove it. Or I need to bring up Jesus more. The life of Daniel, he wasn't handing out tracts. He wasn't on the street corners proclaiming that they need to turn or burn. Not that this is a problem that we're having with too many of you are doing that. I'm not suggesting that. But there's a lot of times we're trying to speak something into existence without living something in existence. I don't say this as guilt. I say this as a means of evaluation. What's the reflection that people would have of us on those that live around us, on those that know us well? Could they write something, a law into order that would catch us? Does that make sense? Is there some kind of thing that they would say because we have demonstrated a certain kind of character, a certain kind of consistency that's a reflection of the God who made us? My reason for bringing this up is to encourage you to be the person, not that you hope you would be, but the person that others would say you are. Utilize the relationships in your life to do some of that inner work that we can't do any other way. We can't do just in a dark room. We need our communities to help reflect these things to us. Last one. Have patience with your story. Have some patience with your life. Here's what I mean. This week, I was driving around, and my six-year-old loves questions. Big fan. And he said, Dad, what's epic mean? And I'm like, it's a thing that annoying people say all the time about everything. I didn't. I said, all right, so there's this story about Homer, not the Simpsons before that. And it's this big story, this big long poem that was written about his whole life, right? This is where we get the Cyclops, the Sirens, these incredible battles. This story is an epic. And so I said, well, the term happens is like really big, exciting things, kind of unbelievable things that are worth the stuff of stories. When those things happen, we say they're epic. I'm like, you just played a basketball game tonight. He's 6 years old. I said, if you had jumped and flipped three times and dunked the ball, that would be epic. That would be worth the highlight reel of your life, right? No matter what else you did, that would totally make the cut. And I think some of us have a fascination with having the kind of life or having these kind of epic events in our lives. If you'd allow me, I think it comes down to we want our lives to count and mean something. We want to differentiate our lives from others. We want to have a kind of epic existence, whatever your definition of that is. The problem is a lot of times we're trying to backward engineer it. What I mean by that is we're trying to have these kinds of experiences that would validate our life, our existence, our story. And what I love is the story of Daniel isn't that. Daniel wasn't looking for lion's dens. Daniel wasn't like, all right, I've heard about Adam and Eve and Noah. I really want to get in the book. What am I going to need? It's going to have to be flashy. Maybe a lion's den. That will capture some eyes. We'll get some clicks on that, right? No. Daniel was rooted in a long story of consistency, of faithfulness to who God called him to be. One of the things that's really fascinating is that there's other stories that are written during this same time period. One of them you may or may not be familiar with is the story of Nehemiah. And Nehemiah is actually this guy going back and rebuilding the city. The king allows him to do that. That happens during this time period. Daniel doesn't go back to the city. He stays working in the foreign government his entire life and existence. That's what he does. The quote that I've been thinking about a lot lately, if you were here a couple weeks ago, Steve Strauss introduced communion. And he used this quote from a poet, Jim O'Donohue. And so I was so fascinated by it. I went back and I listened to the interview that he had did where he had shared the quote that Steve had shared. And he has this this funny little story. He's Irish, and he says, Freud used to say that the Irish are unpsychoanalyzable, because he would say to an Irishman, how are you doing? And he'd say, not bad, right? Really not a lot to look in there. But he said, if you go to the United States and you have like a certain kind of inflection in your voice when you say, how are you doing? You're liable to get the entirety of their life told back to you. And he said, I think it's because people confuse biography with identity. Oh, I thought that was good. How are you doing today? You'll likely hear their biography. These are the events that has transpired around me. Okay. How are you doing today? There's a lot of times we want to create the meaning, the significance, we're looking for it, and the things that we did or the things that happened around us. But I think God is more interested in, no, who are you? What's going on in you? If you would look at your life right now and say, I don't know that I have this story of faith or testament or what God has done. For the culminating, awesome, Bible-worthy story in the life of Daniel, he had to wait till he was 70 to 90 years old. Just because it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean it isn't coming. And there's something incredibly epic about consistency. There's something pretty amazing about just showing up day after day to the lives and the people that are around you. Stories and lives that are worth telling are a lot of that. And so uncovering the thing that is within you is way more interesting than trying to create something outside of you. So here's where I want to encourage you. We've talked about this throughout the message series, and just a prayer. Here's a prayer for this week. Try it out. The prayer after Daniel in the lion's den is, thank you for today. May it be enough. Thank you for today. May it be enough. God has amazing,
epic things in store for your life. But it starts with today, Sunday, March 19th. And then tomorrow, it will be Monday, March 20th. May tomorrow be enough. Show up to the day you have because it's the only thing we have. And may our eyes be open to the miracle of it. May our eyes be open to the significance of it. And may we reclaim who God has made us to be as enough for this day and for tomorrow. Would you pray with me? God, I pray that we would come to see our lives, our stories, who we are as enough. God, I pray we wouldn't try and create meaning or significance in our lives by the things around us. We wouldn't be so interested in working outside of ourselves in things that would translate well to stories, that God, we wouldn't live out of who you have created us to be. God, I pray that Christians, followers of you, would get excited about the epic nature of a consistent living and seeking after you and loving others. And God, I pray that it would start with having our eyes open to the miracle of this moment, of today. God, and may today be enough. May we not spend our time in living in something other than today. May we ignore the siren call of yesterday and tomorrow and be here now. It's in your name we pray. Amen. So would you stand? So may we go and be the people of God, awake and aware of this moment and today, seeing who God has already created us to be so we can get about doing the incredible things that God has called our lives to. May today be enough. Amen and amen. We'll see you next week.